From the Mid-Hudson Valley Broadcast Studio at IBM Poughkeepsie, this is Behind the Sharks, the podcast that brings you the stories of the sharks behind Shark Week. I'm Chris.
I'm Luke.
And I'm Lindsay.
And on the show today, our interview with Sharkorporian Captain Ed Robinson.
We'll wrap up the show with this week's Combat Robotics event calendar.
We're going to need a bigger show.
If you like our show, Behind the Bots or Behind the Sharks, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. You can also find us on Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Sharkify,
Sharkbook,
Sharkbox,
Sharkopedia.
You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for daily content, shark-related and non-shark-related, or you can find us on our website, behindthebots.com. And hey, tell a friend. We really appreciate your support.
A little business before we begin. Behind the Bots is co-hosting the 2019 Canadian National Championship in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, in partnership with the Saskatoon Combat Robotics Club and Fingertech Robotics. So if you're in Central Canada and love combat robotics, put this event on your calendar this weekend, August 10th and 11th at the Saskatoon X.
This week, the Discovery Channel replaced all of its robots with sharks, so we thought it was only appropriate to catch up with Ed Robinson, the captain of Sharko. So do you guys watch Shark Week?
Okay, I watched one episode of Shark Week this week. It was the most ridiculous episode. I don't know if, like, all Shark Week is ridiculous. Is some of it serious?
None of it is ridiculous, Luke.
Okay, well, this one was definitely ridiculous. I was watching it. Okay. I was watching part of, like, the day with Shark Week on mute, and then I actually listened to one episode. The episode that I listened to was there were a bunch of people, and they threw a rubber shark into a river. And they wanted to see if a crocodile would eat this piece of trash. That was the entire show.
That's actually a great, like, analogy for just how humans, like, interact with the world and nature.
Okay, the whole premise of the show was like, well, sharks don't normally swim up this river, but I wonder what would happen if they did. So they threw in this, like, rubber shark. And a crocodile ate it, and they were like, what? Like, of course. It's just a weird thing in the river. Crocodiles eat everything. They're like trash monsters, you know?
And alligators have no frame of reference for what a shark is.
Crocodiles.
Oh, sorry. Crocodiles.
Alligators would never eat a piece of trash. Come on.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I need to read up on my crocodile versus alligator history. But crocodiles have no frame of reference for what a shark is, so it's not like they're going to be instinctually scared of this rubber shark. And now all they've done is poisoned it with rubber.
Yeah. Like all the time they cut open sharks and they're like, there was a license plate and a coconut and there were 400 plastic bags in this thing.
Oh.
And then someday they're going to be cutting open crocodiles and being like, this thing ate a rubber shark. There's a whole rubber shark inside of this crocodile.
I feel like I could produce a Shark Week episode. I think you just need a couple of elements. You need people in wetsuits.
Yep.
Everybody needs to be wearing a wetsuit.
Yep.
You got to be pointing at the water a lot.
Yep.
And you got to have at least one person with an Australian accent.
Check.
Just for some reason, we trust the Australians with sharks more than anybody else on the planet.
Yeah.
You're also going to need a bigger boat.
I already made that joke.
You know what? I made it again.
I made that joke first.
So. I made it again.
So as the earliest adopter of BattleBots in our group, I'm also proud to say that I was probably also the earliest Shark Week fan in this room.
I don't understand Shark Week. What's the appeal?
So when I was a child, you know, there were two special times of year. There was Christmas, where you got unconditional love and presents. And then there was Shark Week, which was better than both of those things.
What happened at your birthday, Chris?
Nothing. Nothing. So, yeah, Shark Week used to be – it was like this incredible week. And Shark Week wasn't all day. It was like 3 hours of programming a night.
Okay.
And it was just – it was like Jacques Cousteau-style documentaries of like – real, like, marine biologists out there trying to just learn more about sharks. And, like, the content has changed so drastically over the last two decades. It is unbelievable. Now it's like you don't even know if they're trying to, like, preserve these animals for future generations. Like, you'll have one documentary that's just like, sharks would never just attack humans. And then the next show on that's like, when deadly sharks attack humans and kill all the humans. And you're like, what am I supposed to believe, Discovery Channel? And then they're like, oh, but check out this other documentary of a megalodon. It's probably real. Is it real? I don't know. Maybe. Maybe it's real. And then it's like, wait a minute. This is the channel that made a mermaids documentary.
Yes, let's like a not few forget years ago. That.
Like, don't you dare lie to me about there might be a megalodon. First of all, I'm sure there is a megalodon out there. I don't go near the ocean. I don't like to go. I run away from, like, when like the wave washes up onto the shore, and then, like, maybe like a 4 or 8 millimeter slice of water just kind of comes. I retreat from that. Because I know sharks can attack in, like, shallows.
Yeah.
And I want to make sure that even at that level.
Yeah.
My body, to something that can't see well, is it a walrus? You know, is it some kind of, like.
Are you walrus shaped?
Depends on how I'm lounging on the beach. But I'm like a rare albino walrus, and I just don't want anything to get the wrong idea.
You're also a glutton for punishment because you make me watch every horrible shark movie that there is out there.
I'm preparing you.
Okay, It sounds to me that Shark Week
has ruined my life.
Has really backfired. You know, I think that they were trying to build empathy for the sharks, not fear,
right,
for the walrus-shaped humans on the beach.
So I have a couple of interesting shark facts that I would like to share with you guys.
Oh, we are stretching this out. I love it. Okay.
So there's actually a lot of debate over where the best place to punch a shark is.
I know.
Yes.
Yeah, right in the tail.
Lindsay?
I mean, the joke is that you punch it right between the eyes.
The joke?
Is there a joke?
Yeah, there is, like.
Is there, like, a comedian doing, like, a tight shark 10 minutes?
Back in the day when Dane Cook was, like, a popular comedian, he joked about this.
I'm cutting this out.
No. You listen to Dane Cook.
You know what?
There's a lot of debate over where the best place to punch a shark is. Luke says the tail. Lindsay?
I was talking over you when you started, so you might want to restart that.
Where do you punch a shark, Lindsay?
Right between the eyes.
I'm right, right?
No, the best place to punch a shark is while you're still in the water.
What?
Because, like, you don't want to, like, bring the shark up onto land to punch it or bring it into a boat.
No. Oh, God.
No.
You want to punch it while you're still in the water because that's when it can get you.
Is that what the research said?
I watch a lot of Shark Week, Luke, and I don't need to take any lip from you.
Okay, but how would you swim behind a shark to punch it in the tail?
Okay, well, you got to do some stealth swimming. Okay, that's very important. You get into the water. The shark can't even see it because you're going so slowly. Okay, they can only see movement. Okay, right? Then as the shark's coming past you, all right, you just punch it right in the tail.
Right.
It's so stunned that it goes and swims off to some other part of the ocean.
Of course, you guys know why sharks only live in salt water, right?
Oh God, is this another joke? Are you telling us real facts?
This is real.
Lindsay, do you have any theories?
It's going to be a joke. I know that he's lying to us, so just get on with it.
Chris only makes jokes. It's frankly. There are a few species out there that can survive in brackish water, and I think in Mexico there's a freshwater shark. But I mean, the real reason why sharks swim in salt water is because pepper water makes them sneeze.
Oh god.
And this is
the worst episode we've ever done of this show. I'm so sorry. This is what happens when BattleBots goes on a break.
I guess my jokes are wearing a little thin.
Oh. Okay, that was good. Let's get to our interview.
I really need to take a hammer to your head.
Wow, that was so violent. Lindsay, that's Jesus. Not a per- – children are listening
to the show.
It's
you might give some of these bot builders an idea out there.
Ooh, I would love a hammerhead bot.
Well,
ooh,
that could be a good segue.
Yeah.
A great segue because after the break, our interview with Ed Robinson, captain of Sharko.
Thanks for recording. I'd like to go ahead and say, first off, I like tacos.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Me too.
Yeah, that is
tacos rule.
Yes. Yes. You know, maybe we should go get tacos after this. You
ooh.
Know? Yeah.
I'm making tacos for dinner. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
It's Shark Week on the Discovery Channel, so it's only appropriate that we catch up with Team Blaze Captain Edward Robinson, who designed one of the most beautiful bots we've ever seen, Sharkoprian. Outside of combat robots, Ed is a retired sword swallower, a longtime entertainer at Renaissance fairs and armor maker, and was once one of the top clowns at one of the biggest circuses in the country. We're hoping to get into all of that within the next hour. So, Ed, can you introduce yourself to our listeners? Where do you live and what do you do?
Right now I'm living in, hi, how's it going? Hello, hello, good morning. Right now I'm in San Diego, just outside San Diego, in a little bitty horse town called Poway.
And
it's a beautiful little bitty town up in the mountains.
Yeah, I love Poway. I've been there before. I'm originally from California myself. And
oh, wow.
Driven all over that area. It's really, really very, very beautiful.
Gorgeous up here. I love it.
Yeah.
I have a little shop out back of my teammate John's house, and I build teardrop trailers back there, and I have a little store on the internet, and I make robots basically for virtual worlds, NPCs and role-playing toys.
Yeah. Yeah. Real quick while we're on that, how do people get in touch with you online, you know, if they want to check out your trailers?
Best way is Facebook.
Cool.
That's really the only internet presence I have anymore. If they find me, Edward Robinson, on Facebook, everything is there. You can find the shark. You can find my trailers. You can find my prop-making business. I do escape room stuff. Everything I do, I put pictures up there.
Yeah, cool. The trailers are really cool. Like they look kind of like a Woody on the side, you know?
Exactly.
And they're just
yeah, retro
beautiful.
Woody trailers.
Yeah, beautiful. Beautiful work.
That's the business name, Woodpecker.
Yeah. So speaking of beauty, you know, Sharko is one of the most beautiful bots that we've ever seen.
Thank you very much.
You know, it's fast, it's fluid, you know, it's got this really big tail, and the tail, like, moves perfectly. It looks like a shark. Can you tell us...
The best compliment I could get right there.
Yeah. Can you tell us more about the current version of Sharko? You know, can you give us some of its specifications, like its top speed and the main weapon and stuff like that?
The most popular, the most prevalent version. Right now I'm building version 9. The most popular one that has always had NPC 74 is for drive. Last two builds, I didn't have the money to get NPCs, so I used old wheelchair motors.
Wow.
They were not great. They worked, but they were not great. Hey, speaking of to my teammate John, who sounds like he's pulling up. So it was a little bit slow this last time, and because I didn't have a lot of money for the build. Normally, I have NPC 74s. The new one has 4-inch mags.
Cool.
Big, fat mags.
So you were saying this is version 9. So I'm interested in going all the way back to version 1. So I know that back in the early 2000s, you competed on a TV show called Robotica with an early version of Sharko called Fintastic. You know, can
that
you tell us?
That was the very first shark. I was the first person to turn a propane tank on its side and make a robot out of it.
Yes, that's awesome. Can you?
That whole robot cost about $1,500.
Yeah, can you tell our listeners about Robotica if they haven't heard of it before? You know, can you talk about the format and some of the design that went into competing on that particular show?
Robotica was, it was really not a combat show at all. It was never designed to be. There was combat at the end, but it was more about having a good, dependable bot that was drivable. You had to get over bricks. You had to get over cans. You had to scoop things around. You had to drive through an obstacle course. There was some combat involved. You had to pass each other. You know, at certain times, you were fighting the other guy to get around, and it was a really well-done competition. It was different because it was obstacles up to the final fight. And unfortunately, it was my very first heavyweight, and I sucked so bad. I'm sorry. It was my very first heavyweight, and it was so bad that I lost every single fight.
I would say, though, that it was like such a cool looking bot. Like, I got to see YouTube videos of it, and like you can see that same shape that Sharko is today. And like it's just like I'm really blown away by your design and you know the artistic thought that goes into these shark designs. I think that they're just so cool.
I think there's something to be said about being round. Because every surface is a glancing surface. There's no such thing as a flat surface on the shark.
Mm.
Every single surface on them is glancing except for the end of the steel terror where I want people to hit. Every other surface is basically a wedge.
Yeah. Now, Ed, you've built so many cool robots over the last two decades, like Robot X, PT Bruiser, Snookums, yeah. Sharko. You just competed in China with your newest bot, Excelsior, which is a gorgeous bot. Do you have a favorite out of all the bots you've built?
Excelsior, that's such a fun name. I'm going to miss Stanley. Sharko is really my favorite so far. I loved Robot X because he was my first. And he was the closest to the master. Because I always loved the master. I thought that was a beautiful robot. The weapon on Robot X was actually one of the swords I used to use on my sword swallowing show.
My goodness.
Yeah, that weapon in the arena at BattleBots was down my throat many, many times over the years.
Really putting yourself into every bot, I guess you could say.
Little piece of me out there in the arena. So he was always my favorite because, you know, it was my first one. And he looked so cool. It was just a dragon head.
Yeah. In the early 2000s, you ran a series of robot combat events in Las Vegas called RoboJoust. Could you tell us more about RoboJoust and what the format was and what types of bots competed?
It's funny the RoboJoust happened because I was production manager at the Castle of Muskogee in Oklahoma, and I was out in the shop building a hovercraft. Now, any story that starts with I was out in the shop building a hovercraft, that's a fun story, right? My ex-wife, she yells, hey, come in here and see this TV thing. So I go inside, and it's combat robots. I'm covered with fiberglass. Within a month of seeing that, we had moved from Oklahoma to Las Vegas, and I had built Robot X within 4 months and was at Treasure Island fighting. We changed our entire lives within a month of seeing that show, and then they canceled BattleBots. I moved to Las Vegas, changed my entire life, moved my ex-wife, everything, and they canceled BattleBots. So what was I to do? I started my own event. And since I was in Las Vegas, it seemed handy. I didn't have the money for arena. So what we did was the sportsman. We basically did not allow spinning, and you got to actually fight the full 3 minutes every fight. Hardly ever did you have a knockout.
Yeah, I got to watch some YouTube videos of RoboJoust, and it looks like there were some that were outside, you know, kind of like the street fight style, and then there were others that were like indoors and just kind of the big arena style. You know, can you talk about like how big that grew to? You know, I know there were dozens of bots that would come in from all over the country to compete.
Well, Ray Billings has trophies from RoboJoust events. Almost every big builder has fought at one of my events. A lot of the small builders, I mean, I did them for 7-8 years. It was a really fun event because your robot didn't get destroyed. So people would come, and it's Las Vegas. I like that the original BattleBots was under a bridge out on the road. So I really always tried to keep the feel of the original, what I think it was Stephen Felk and Greg and Trey and maybe Mark Thorpe. There was, you know, they were under a bridge, and they were out in the street fighting robots, and that's the feel I wanted for Las Vegas. But then when the casinos were interested, so I started producing the shows in the casinos, and they paid a little bit. They paid enough for me to basically have the event for free. And all the builders came in and got rooms in the casinos, and the last 3 years, I think we did them inside the casinos.
Wow.
We did one on the rooftop of the plaza on Fremont Street. That was a blast.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean,
I'm a producer. I'm an entertainer. I that's what I do.
I would love to see RoboJoust come back.
We're trying. We put up a Facebook page, and it's almost got enough people. Because the thing with a no weapons event and no mass weapons event, you put hay bales and telephone poles around. You got a nice safety barrier, and because there's no big weapons, there's no parts really flying. You don't get your robot destroyed. You get to practice in the arena against another robot and actually get some driving practice. And get to take your robot home in mostly one piece.
Yeah, that's so cool. That's actually a good segue into my next question, kind of like about the state of the sport. So, you know, when you're watching BattleBots today, you know, you went to BattleBots this season. It just seems like the bots are going in this particular direction of like hyper-competitive, like super engineered kind of things. And like we're seeing fewer and fewer art bots and kind of like bots that you can build at home in your garage by yourself. And I'm curious, you know, if you have thoughts about that, you know, are we looking at maybe splitting the sport into two where we have an event for everybody else and then this other event for these hyper competitive teams? You know, do you have thoughts about that?
You know, I do, and they're slightly divisive. Of course, everything I say is divisive these days. Excuse me. There's a different thing with a garage builder. When you got a bunch of guys out in the garage having a good time, building a $3,000, $4,000 robot and going off to an event like RoboJoust, a party for the weekend, it's a whole different feel than going to film a television show. They have to sell that. They have to sell commercial time. They have to sell it to an audience. They have to sell it to producers. Without the massive destruction, that show would not sell. So, and the art bots are a part of it. You have to basically build a cheap art bot, go there, put on a good show, and realize your robot's probably going to get destroyed, but you're helping the sport.
Yeah, it's an interesting conundrum at that point, because you want to be able to keep building, but you know, when you're spending so much money and then it just keeps getting wrecked and destroyed, it's I'm sure a hard thing to keep doing.
I'm self-employed. I live in a very small artist shack. I have solar energy and a little, you know, I live a very small lifestyle. I don't have really a paycheck besides, you know, a little bit that I do. But I build robots and I know they're going to get destroyed. It cost me $5,000 to build the last Sharko, and my teammate John paid for a lot of it. And I sold my Doom Buggy to build the last Sharko. And it got completely destroyed. But the thing is, with that propane tank in the middle, it hardly ever really gets completely destroyed because the propane tank is fine. I just put new wheels on it, new face and tail, and go.
Nice. So we're really interested in learning more about your experience on King of Bots. So you're one of the rare people who's actually competed on three different continents with combat robotics. And so we want to, yeah, which is a great title to have.
I'm proud of that. That's one of the things I was hoping to get, and I did get it. I'm in the three continent club. Yay.
Yeah, nice job. So yeah, we're interested in hearing about your experience on King of Bots with Excelsior. So first, can you describe Excelsior for someone who hasn't seen it before?
Excelsior is a goldfish.
Ooh.
Quite literally, it is a goldfish. The original design I submitted was more of a Dunkley Osteus mixed with a goldfish. It had a really mean face with really big sharp teeth. And it's a flipper. It's a high-pressure air flipper. And when I submitted the design, they said, it looks a little mean. Can you make it nicer? So I made it a little bit nicer. And I turned it red and mean and demon-y and spiky. And they didn't like that. And I got another note from production that said, it's still a little mean looking. Can you make it more goldfishy? So I made it look almost exactly like a goldfish. It is a goldfish for all intents and purposes. It's got really neat lighting system through all the fins. It's got the tail sticking out the back, but it's shorter because, you know, goldfish doesn't have a long tail like the shark. So it's shorter like a goldfish. Basically, it's a goldfish in the face is a flipper. 250 PSI flipper.
Wow. So what are some of the big differences between competing in the U.S. versus China?
Well, China, King of Bots was the first event that's ever given me a build stipend.
Yeah.
They paid for Excelsior to be built. Huzzah! Congratulations. Thank you very much. They gave me $16,000, basically. I haven't been paid all of it yet, but they paid for that robot to be built. So I was able to put top of the money parts in there. All the plasma cutting, all the water jetting, all the fat mag motors. It's got oversized speed controllers, overbanked batteries. Everything is better than it needs to be. And it was really, really fun to build a robot like that.
Were there any other, in terms of like the competition, the way the show was run or the battles were run, was there anything that you would like to see implemented back at home?
I want to stay nice. I don't want to be that guy,
sure.
But there are things that need to be changed before I would consider King of Bots a serious competition.
Yeah.
They need to implement standard competition rules. They need to stick to them. Mm. You can't eliminate people for winning.
Yeah.
That's not the way competitions work.
That seems like a pretty no-brainer.
It's a reality show. It's not a serious competition.
Yeah. Right.
And, you know, as long as you take it as what it is, it's fine. But you can't watch King of Bots and go, this is a serious competition. It's not.
Are there any ways in which it was the same between King of Bots and BattleBots?
In the arena. The fight is the fight.
Yeah.
There's absolutely nothing staged. There's nothing fake about the fights. Absolutely 100% real inside that arena. And that is the same no matter where you go. Once they close the doors and turn the lights on, the fight's on, and that's all the same.
Awesome.
And that was amazing. That was so fun. I love fighting. I love fighting robots. It's so fun.
Now, Ed, I'm fascinated by the story of your life. We're really interested in hearing a little bit more about you know, your coming of age story, because it's so interesting and unique. So we often hear the trope about growing up and then deciding to run off and join the circus, but you actually did it. Could you tell us a little bit about like what it was like growing up in Florida and then your ultimate decision to go and join the circus?
The easiest way to say it is I knew I was an entertainer from the day I was born. I think my goal in life is to make people smile. I think there's nothing better, there's no greater aspiration in the world than to just go around making people smile. So I always wanted to be a clown. And, you know, growing up at my age, I'm not a boomer, I'm Gen X, so we still had circuses when I was young. And I went to the circus as a kid, and I fell in love with the clowns and the smell, and I got to go backstage into Clown Alley. And it's the same story that you hear as a trope. I smelled the grease paint. I was walking in the sawdust. It was one of those things where I knew that's where I belonged. So I just spent my childhood trying to be a clown. I learned juggling and riding a unicycle. I did magic. I had a magic show. I'd go around and do shows for other kids before I could even drive. My mom would drive me around to do magic shows. I got paid $25 to do a half-hour show. I was poor. I always have been, always will be, so I couldn't afford the big fancy effects other people had, other big magicians. That's how I started building. I'd got some plans, and I built a substitution trunk. That was my first big build. Then I sold that and built another one. Then I realized, hey, I could build stuff and sell it. So basically, I'm doing the same exact thing now that I did when I was a kid. I build cool stuff, I sell it, and I entertain people with it. Back then, I was a magician. I ran away with the circus because home was, let's just say, not great. I was, you know, for a split home, bounced around here and there, and I was young, and the circus came to town, and I had to make up, I had the skill, and I ran away, quite literally. My mom dropped me off at the circus, and that was it. I was 17 years old. Boom, gone.
Wow. That is unreal.
Somebody's got to do it, or there wouldn't be a story about it.
Yeah.
That is true.
I worked for years to be a clown. I traveled with a lot of shows. I was a canvas boss for a lot of shows, in charge of putting the tent up and taking it down every day. You drive 200 miles, you put the tent up, you do three shows, you take the tent down, put it in the truck, you get a couple hours sleep, You get up in the morning, you drive 200 miles, you put the tent up day after day after day, every day in a different town. A holiday, a vacation, was when you stayed in the same town 2 days in a row.
Wow.
Right. Being a circus clown is not an easy life.
That is absolutely incredible. Now, at one point, you retired the big shoes, and you moved on to become a sword swallower. Now, this is a skill I know even less about. How did you learn to swallow swords, and what kind of process is that?
I spent my whole life learning everything I could possibly learn. I learned how to be a falconer because I met a falconer, and we camped together, and he taught me how to train falcons. I met a sword swallower. And I talked to him, and he said, I could teach you how to swallow swords. And I'm like, okay, sure. It was just one of those chance things. Of course, I happened to be in a box full of snakes on the Carnival Sideshow playing Zoma the Monkey Boy. Actually, if you look at that picture on my Skype thing, can you see the picture?
Yes.
That's me in the skeleton face with snakes in my hands. That's the character I was playing when I met the guy that taught me to swallow swords.
And I'm sorry, what was the name of the character again?
Zoma, X-O-M-A. It's a sideshow. It's like the wild boy born in the Borneo jungle. Let me draw it. Let me see if I can do it. Born in the jungle, raised in a cave. He's Zoma, the wild boy. He lives with the snakes. He eats, he lives, he breathes. He's real, he's alive, and he's on the inside.
That was amazing.
I sat in that box and played with snakes for a living. That's what I did. And the guy said, hey, I could teach you to swallow swords. And so I learned how to swallow swords and became a sword swallower.
There can't be a lot of room for trial and error when it comes to that. I don't even know what learning that must be like.
The guy that taught me is actually, his name is Red. And Red is one of the most prolific teachers of sword swallowing. He's probably taught more people than anybody else. Right now, there's less than 24 professional real sword swallowers in America.
Wow.
There's probably a lot more people that can, but there's less than 24 that really do. When he taught me, and he's taught a bunch of people, like I say, I am one of the very few people who learned it the first try. It took me about 2 weeks of exercises and practice and doing certain things, getting ready for that first try. But the first time I swallowed a sword, I got it down past my throat, into my stomach, and it was an eye-watering, eye-opening
Hopefully
experience.
No further than that.
Actually, I learned eventually to go through into the stomach and down through the bottom of my stomach into the intestinal tract.
What?
Through the mouth, through the throat, through the esophagus, through the esophageal canal, through the upper sphincter and the lower sphincter into the intestines.
Wow.
Ow.
Oh my goodness.
Well, and ow.
Sometimes like I'll hack up a lung because I accidentally swallowed a Skittle wrong.
27 and a half inches was my longest blade.
Wow. That is incredible.
You know, it's you got to do something that nobody else is doing. If you want to be on stage all by yourself in front of a couple thousand people and make them pay attention to you, and at the end of that show you go, hey, I hope you liked my show. If you really liked it, give me $1. If you didn't like it, give me 20. And you hold out your hat, and that's how you make a living.
Right.
You have to be doing something that blows them away.
I'm blown away just hearing about it, so I can't even imagine seeing it in person.
Now, Ed.
Interesting way to make a living.
Sure.
Now, Ed, finally here's something that I do know a little bit something about. I'm a huge Renaissance enthusiast, but you performed at Renaissance fairs on the East Coast for years as Phoenix Blaze. How does that work? Is it similar to the circus in that you travel to a new place and you set up and you spend a couple of weeks or months there? Like, what's the day-to-day life like?
Yeah, it's like that. The circus, you move every day. In the Renaissance Fair, and because it's the same basic unit for an eight-month tour, you go with one show, and it's the same exact people that go city to city to city, and you see the same show. With the Renaissance Fair, it would be like 20 different circuses meeting up in one city, and then 20 different circuses meeting up in the next city. It's always a different group of people. So you're in a new place all the time, but you're also meeting a whole new bunch of people. There is a few that are be the same, like, you know, East Coast people. I did an 8-month tour from Florida to Pennsylvania, and I would run into the same few people every now and then. But for the most part, it's a completely different group of people at every fair.
Mm. Could you tell us a little bit about the persona of Phoenix Blaze and what he did?
Sword swallowing, fire eating, fire breathing, and disturbing behavior with an ice pick. 28 years of my life as a single act on stage in front of thousands of people every day, doing 3 or 4 shows a day, swallowing swords, eating fire, breathing fire, jumping through a hoop of daggers that was on fire. I did a dance with a whip. I did some juggling with blades. I walked on a blade ladder. I balanced swords. It was basically a one-man fakier sideshow juggling show with a whole bunch of sharp stuff and a lot of fire.
Do you have a favorite Renaissance fair? And what are some of your other favorites from, like, around the country?
The Renaissance fairs in Florida were really fun because the people in Florida are great. But you get into the middle countries like the Ohio and Oklahoma and the Carolina fairs, you get some really beautiful woods. But up in Pennsylvania, like the Pennsylvania Renaissance fairs, just amazing country up there. And there's a permanent building. It's a permanent venue. So all the buildings have been there for years. And they just look, you feel like you're in a really Renaissance village up there. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, we're situated in the Hudson Valley. So we're only about an hour away, and we attend every year the New York Renaissance Fair in Tuxedo Park. Yeah.
I was actually the production manager of the Pennsylvania Renaissance Fair for 6 years.
Wow.
Wow.
I ran that whole fair for a long time. Yeah, it was a fun fair. That's the thing with the Renaissance Fair. You know, I got tired of traveling after a while and took a break, and I went into management. That's how I started producing events. I produced some of the largest Renaissance fairs in the country. It's a fun job.
I was going to say, I mean, between all of this traveling and going from city to city, how do you even have time to get into something like combat robotics?
You know, I kind of stopped traveling when I retired from the Renaissance Fair. You, when you're sword swallowing, you only get a couple shots for a mistake. And I took one too many shots, and I made a pretty bad mistake. And I spent almost a year in the hospital recovering from stabbing myself in the stomach.
Oh.
So I decided to retire from the Renaissance Fair.
Yeah.
And I had met my buddy John back in 2000, my teammate, at the first BattleBots I went to. We just hooked up and got along and became best friends. We were brothers by another mother. And I happened to be in Escondido at the Renaissance Fair here in Escondido where I had my accident. And he's in Poway, which is, you know, 10, 15 miles down the road. So after my recovery, I came to visit him, and I just never left. And now I've been here for 5 years.
Mm. Now, Ed, you make custom armor through your own company, Gauntlet Props and Puzzles. Can you tell us a little bit about that and what types of things you like to build and how people can get in touch with you?
I love steel. I love steel. Last year, not this year, but last year's BattleBots, that was like in the intro, was me saying, I love steel. I love to hammer steel. I love to pound steel. Turning a flat sheet of steel into a beautiful articulated pair of gauntlets with the engraving and the Celtic knotwork and everything else. And they're 16-gauge steel. I mean, you can hit anything with it. You can hit it with a baseball bat, and you're not going to get hurt. It's real sword-fighting armor. To build that gives me a thrill. When it's done and you put it on and somebody else looks at it and it's beautiful and it's done and it works, it's an accomplishment. It's not like flipping a burger or adding up things on a cash register. It's a job that really gives me a lot of satisfaction. I sell a lot of stuff in the old days to the SCA, but nowadays nobody wants to pay the money that it's worth. I mean, I could build a beautiful helmet, but I'd have to charge somebody $600 and they could buy one now off eBay for $150. So it just doesn't really pay unless somebody wants really beautiful custom work.
So what you're telling me is that if I really needed someone to fabricate me a custom unicorn battle axe, that might be something you'd be able to handle.
Oh, absolutely. I can build almost anything.
Well, maybe
I can build it functional, or I can build it acceptable for a cosplay. It doesn't matter. Well,
I won't. I won't be swallowing it.
I used to work at a plexiglass factory, and I've worked at fiberglass factories. I've worked at injection molding. I've worked with steels and plastics, and I can build almost anything. That's what I do, is build things.
Excellent. So I know you mentioned him a little bit already, but is there anything else you want to tell us about your teammate, John Hoffman, and what he does on the team?
John is he's an engineer. We met, like I said, back in 2000. It was the first BattleBots I went to. I had Robot X. I had him slung over my shoulder like a bass guitar, and John thought that was funny, and he walked up and said, "Hey, that's funny." And we just became friends, and I was – we've been teammates now for, 20 years. We became best friends. We built a lot of robots together. He was the safety officer at RoboJoust, and he was the best man at my wedding.
Aww.
For my wedding, he built me a remote control robotic stripper pole. I mean, literally, this thing was, it was just gorgeous. It was dynamic. It was 8 foot across with NPC robotics and Melty Brain and a light show. A sound system, stainless steel pole, a light show on the top. It was a robotic stripper pole.
That is a great friend to have.
That's why he's my best. We get along so well.
That's awesome. Is there anyone else that you want to give a shout out to?
Greg and Trey. Greg and Trey have been busting their butt to keep BattleBots going. They really work hard. I mean, I realize they got a lot of things going on in their life, but and all things said, they've done a lot for Robotics Combat, along with all the other event organizers like Dave. And it's just crazy to try to put on a robot event and keep it going and keep it topical and keep it paying. So you got to shout out to Greg and Trey and BattleBots and King of Bots and all of them. Anybody out there putting on an event, you got my shout out, man.
All right, Ed, I got a question for you. In spirit of Shark Week, if you could fight any shark with Sharkorpion, what species would you fight?
A real shark versus a robot shark?
You got it.
I would not want to fight a megalodon because that thing would just be huge. I think it'd be fun, a hammerhead, because the original Fantastic was a hammerhead. And I might as well say it now, the new Sharko is going to be a hammerhead.
Ooh!
Wow. Breaking news.
The face is done.
Wow.
He's already completed. It's a running robot. I'm working on the mech body right now. He has gone back to his roots, and the new Sharko is a HPA flipper hammerhead shark, just like he was originally.
Oh, man.
That is so incredible. Ed, I really want to thank you so much for taking the time. This has been, hands down, the best interview I think I've ever had in my entire life, and I'm not kidding. I've interviewed hundreds of people. This is seriously the most entertaining.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, I love to talk about myself.
Yeah.
You kept us smiling the whole time.
Yeah. Well, we can't wait to see Sharko in the box, and really look forward to talking to you again soon.
All right.
Yes, please, 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 please come back.
Yes.
I will. Yell at me. I'm here.
After the break, we'll return with this week's Combat Robotics event calendar.
Welcome back from the break. Time for this week's Combat Robotics event calendar. On Saturday, it's Norwalk Havoc in Norwalk, Connecticut, where they'll be fighting 3-pound and 12-pound robots, with the winner getting a miniature golden dumpster. Wow, a miniature golden dumpster.
That's a prize that you probably wouldn't want to throw away.
I want that dumpster so badly. I'm not even kidding.
Next year.
Norwalk is our hometown, closest robot fighting league. And I am pledging to you that I will win that golden dumpster someday.
I hope you do, Luke. I hope you do.
Because beside that golden dumpster, I believe there is $1,000 cash prize.
Yes. In addition to the golden dumpster, there's a $1,000 cash prize. Thank you, Chris. We heard through the grapevine that a couple of BattleBots teams will be competing there. So if you're in the Connecticut or Tri-State area this weekend, go check out Norwalk Havoc. Also on Saturday in Peoria, Illinois, it's Bot Brawl 2019, one of the premier combat robot events in the Midwest, where they'll be fighting 1-pound and 3-pound robots. In the UK on Saturday, it's Robo Showdown in Milton Keynes, about an hour and a half north of London, where they'll be fighting ant weights. On Saturday and Sunday in Sharkskatoon, Sharkskatchewan, it's the Canadian National Championships at the Sharkskatoon X. Finally, if you're in Wichita, Kansas this weekend, go to ICT Comic-Con to meet the builders behind Battlesaw.
This week's listener shout-out goes to superfan Leo Kongna, who really wanted to attend the Canadian National Championship this weekend in Saskatoon, but will instead be swimming at the Western Canada Summer Games in Swift Current, Saskatchewan. We really want to wish Leo the best of luck at the Games.
Good Sharks, luck, Leo.
Sharkskatchewan.
If you'd like to send us a listener shout-out, message us on Facebook or email us at behindthebots@gmail.com.
We're about finished here today, but we'll be back in your chum feed next Wednesday with our recap of the next episode of BattleBots. Luke will be in Alaska for the next 2 weeks, so we'll have a special guest co-host, Kyle Kroos, and our interview with Railgun Max Captain Elaine Wu.
See you next week.
Thanks for joining in, guys.
Bye.
Don't go in the water.